And we're back. Another week of college football. That means another week of Dan and Dalton and the College Football Show band.
Not a week like last week. There's nothing like last week. That was crazy. Saturday night.
Yeah, the game on Saturday night.
It turned out to be the game. And how about this? Think about this, Dalton. The game, called like the game going into it. At the end, it's the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the game a lot of people turned off.
Yeah.
Because it was such a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the game in about three or four different ways.
Have you seen Georgia fans that have online or maybe through your phone interviews you've had with so many Bulldogs fans in the last couple weeks? Are there Georgia fans who turned it off and didn't watch the end of the game?
I don't know that. I think they're too fanatical.
That's what I'm thinking.
They wouldn't do. But America. Like, yeah. America tuned into that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, you know, oh, God, I got to watch something else. Could have been a Carol Burnett rerun. But they ran away from that game when it was 30-7, 28-0.
And an absolutely classic ending.
Amazing. Ryan Williams, mm-hmm. Phenomenal. So this weekend, I don't think we can hope for the kind of dramatics we got last weekend, because what we saw last weekend is so rare.
Yeah, well, we might see a game as entertaining, but it won't be a game between top five.
Yep.
Opponents that have this long or recent crazy history, like yep. Alabama and Georgia do.
One-sided.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned this to you. I talked to an Alabama fan. I really haven't talked to many Georgia fans about it all. I talked to an Alabama fan the other night, an extended interview over the phone, and he saw the game in an Alabama lens very negatively about Alabama. And mm-hmm. I was like, are you kidding me? You guys took it to us in the first half. And he was like, yeah, but the fact that they fell behind, he saw that as a complete, whatever happened in the first half didn't really matter because their performance was so bad in the second half. I looked at it a different way, right? I was, from the beginning, I was like, Georgia got hammered. And even their comeback I thought was fraudulent because a lot of it was just big throws. That's really not them. They didn't display any measured offense in the second half. They didn't continued execution. I didn't see that.
At least
now, defensively, I guess they did their job.
Yeah, and for Georgia, I mean, even though they come out with an L, that's a confidence booster. If they're behind 10 points to Auburn this weekend, mm-hmm. for instance, there's no sweat. If it's third quarter and Georgia's down, I don't think they'll be freaking out, because we saw what they did in that Bama game, the way they came back.
You're probably right. They probably, through that game, they bought a level of confidence that you've got to go through something to get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a preseason thing. This is going to be a confident team. You're right. They're probably, that much probably has happened.
And maybe DeBoer learned a little more about clock management, yep. you know, and running the time out, running the time out of the play clock when he gets a chance to. But you mentioned Ryan Williams, and that everything's going against Bama. They were outscored, what'd you say, 35-3 or something?
Yeah, something like that. It was crazy. When it was 28-0, from that point on, it was
Georgia,
a landslide.
Yeah, and so you'll hear in our conversation with Paul Feinbaum in a little bit, and we were talking earlier this week with him about the, you know, Bama had, I don't think they showed much at the beginning of the year, the teams they played against, because they knew this Georgia game was coming. So Georgia just has curveball after curveball thrown at them, and Milroe playing out of his mind.
Great.
But at the end, when Bama doesn't have any more tricks up their sleeve, they'd fallen behind, what do? You go to the talent. And yep. right now, their most talented player outside of Milroe, as far as a skill player, is a freshman 17-year-old named Ryan Williams. And I've watched that play so many times. I'm no Bama homer, for sure. His body control to wait as long as he did to get that back shoulder catch, and then just so graceful. I've compared him to an Olympic gymnast. Someone the other day said he's like a ballerina. I don't know. Do you call men ballerinas?
Yeah, like a Fred Astaire, like a phenomenal dancer. Mm-hmm. He did that. And the other thing about great dancers, make it look like they're not doing anything at all.
Yeah.
And that's what he makes it look like. And remember, I would tell you when I was trying to describe him, watching him in high school, and I would have trouble finding the words. That's why. What you saw the other night are the things that I would see on a Friday night. And it was like, well, what exactly did he do that was different than other players? And it's just different.
Yeah.
And it's got to do with body control and then being able to accelerate right after he controls himself. Amazing.
Yeah, because he took off from some guys that will be starting in the NFL within the next 2 years.
He took off from an All-American corner, probably, or SEC level corner for sure, and a kid who's a freshman but who's going to be an All-American at safety.
Yeah.
And he also caught a pass against Starks in the middle of the field, that balloon like thing that was bounding around up in the air. That was in the middle of the game, I guess, but amazing.
He probably avoided in his four or five receptions, he may have had more. Probably avoided eight tackles. It's just that run after catch, yardage after catch with Williams, to be as young as he is, amazing. As far as the other games from last week, and looking at our college pick'em, which is still going strong, presented by Spring Hill Ace Hardware, where we have over 500 people this year competing against the spread week in and week out. We had another perfect week. I think the only other week we had someone who went a perfect 10-0 was in week one. That was Sergeant Clyde Frog or something like that.
Yeah.
This week we had Orange Beach Dude go a perfect 10-0.
I love it.
And he's had some other tough weeks, so he's not there near the top of the board. But our leader now has a 3-game lead over the field.
Okay.
M. Frazier went 9-1 last week along with 6 other people. He's now 37-13 against the spread.
Amazing.
This year.
That dude, he would be rich.
That's amazing.
He could be rich if he was taking this to the, maybe he is. Maybe he's playing in this game, but on the side, he's taking those bets and actually putting money on.
Yeah, I kind of miss, not really, but when we had like 100 people playing and no sharks, and then I looked like such a better gambler than I do now. But 37-13 is unbelievable against the spread. And the games we chose, so you had Kentucky with their upset over Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. They, of course, beat the spread. I mean, they beat the Rebels outright. You had A&M. They covered. Auburn did not cover. You and I were counting that as a win.
So if Auburn had won that game, I was 8-2 this weekend.
Wow.
And bang.
You've been on fire this year. Kansas State covered. Let's see. I lost with Penn State, lost Texas, because Mississippi State, I mean, I don't know if I'd say they played them tough.
Yeah, but they played within the spread.
Yeah. Louisville did not cover. That was Notre Dame, who took care of business.
By seven.
Riley Leonard took care of the ball. Let's see. Michigan State didn't cover. Alabama did cover. LSU did cover. So I went 5-5 again this last week. But we have a bunch of games coming up this weekend. And like you said, maybe none on paper set to look as good as that Bama-Georgia game. But plenty more where that came from. Only week 6, so this contest, this season, we have a good 10 weeks to go. Well, let's see, we have probably 7 or 8 weeks until we hit championship weekend, conference championship weekend, and then we have bowl games that follow.
Okay,
so,
all right, well.
Long season to hoe as we move forward.
And it's been fun. It has been fun. I missed a week somewhere along the way. Okay, okay, sirrah, sirrah, but I'm enjoying all this.
When we get back, we've been talking about the Alabama-Georgia game. I as much problem as people have, sometimes for good reason, with Urban Meyer, I still love hearing what these coaches have to say. You have Saban giving analysis now, Urban Meyer giving analysis. There's so many guys down the line who have been in big games, national championship games.
And won them
and built programs. Mm-hmm. They know what it takes. They may not be the best people off the field, have some demons, like we know with Urban and several others. But he had something to say about Kirby Smart and his coaching job last week that I think is worth people hearing.
I thought that was interesting. And again, you're right. When you consider the source, this is not just some guy. This is Urban Meyer. Pretty interesting what he had to say.
You just have to realize there's – wherever you're watching him, whatever screen he's on, there's probably a 24-year-old hottie right around the corner. But that doesn't mean that his football analysis is wrong. So let's not hold that against Urban Meyer.
I don't hold the 24-year-old hottie against him.
I mean, Bill Belichick's dating. You know, maybe I should have been a coach. I don't know.
Maybe I should give out my cell number.
The Dan and Dalton College Football Show continues right after this. And we'll have our talk with Paul Feinbaum. And lay out our picks for this weekend. That's all on the way. Welcome back on your Friday night, or whenever you may be listening to this podcast, the D&D CFB show. Mm-hmm. Dan Brennan over there, Dalton Orwig right here, so it's the Dan and Dalton College Football Show. And we haven't missed. I think every episode we've had this year has been worthy of an award.
And I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, it's the
best. I mean, the show alone, Mobile Mornings, wins awards.
It does, yeah.
So it's not like we have to make that up like the crap you just said. So we win. We are actually award winners in the morning.
Yeah.
If you consider the nappies legitimate awards. And again, that's up for discussion as well.
I certainly believe they're legitimate awards.
Welcome, everyone.
Yeah, I've won a lot of them. And you've won a lot more, that's for sure. So you sent me this clip. You said, hey, you've really kind of been in, I wouldn't say, it's not quite a grieving process since the game Saturday night.
No.
You know, you have the stages of grief. But you've been more like the Secret Service investigation into what happened.
Something went wrong.
In Butler. Yeah, and you're
Went the hell wrong.
You're walking the steps back. You're saying, all right, why did this happen? Mm-hmm. How can we ensure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, that kind of, and just watching analysis and everything like that. And my takeaway simply was that, I thought Georgia played they were terrible in the first half. And then in the second half, they were out of character offensively, but took the lead, mm-hmm. but they weren't really running the offense. They were just taking shots. They had to convert like four or five fourth downs mm-hmm. in the second half.
Yeah, and they did.
So, yeah. Are you impressed with that or are you like distressed by that?
Yeah.
So as a Georgia fan, I'm more distressed than impressed.
Well, everyone keeps saying this is only the first time they'll play this season.
Yeah.
They're going to play a second time, maybe even a third time.
And so it's
a lot of projection, though.
It is. And I'm looking at the schedule like, look, I don't trust them against Auburn this mm-hmm. week. And anything, they've got so many games left on their schedule, and some are in bold, highlighted, like, this is going to be a tough one. And what game's not going to be tough at this point? If Georgia plays like they played in the first half against Alabama, anybody could beat them.
Yeah, it's the SEC, right?
Yeah,
we've seen it time and time again. And I mean, Tennessee has Bama next week.
Yeah.
That's going to be a 1-4 at a minimum, unless something crazy happens this weekend. Could be a 1-3 or 1-2 matchup.
Yeah, see what happens this week.
You might see Tennessee and Bama play multiple times this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Might see Tennessee-Georgia play more than once this year. But you said Urban Meyer had something to say about the coaching job for Georgia. Here's that clip.
Coaching, to me, there is a – during a year, during a season, during a game, and during moments, you got to earn. I used to do this, stare at our coaches and go like this. You know what that means? You're earning your coaching stripes right now. You're earning them right now. And that means you have to raise up and get your guys, whatever you gots to do, you gots to do. And Kirby Smart, to me, and people are going to listen and say, what is he talking about? That might be the coach of the year moment to bring that team back and get their minds right, because you have a bunch of people right now just got obliterated, and they're not used to that. Those athletes who haven't, they got smoked in a tough environment. They come back and took the lead. The young freshman, Ryan Williams, you can't stop that. That's the Percy Harvin marking. Those are freakish. That was not a coaching error. That was just a guy. So I'm going to say this again. I think the coaching of the year, and everybody's going to say they lost, is what Kirby Smart did in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, to get that team back.
There you go. That was from the show The Triple Option,
yeah.
With Urban Meyer giving his take.
Yeah, and I wasn't so much blown away by the statement necessarily. Anybody could say it, but the fact that Urban Meyer said it, and there's still this Florida-Georgia thing that's out there, trust me, that they don't – go. You can watch Tebow, for as pious and wonderful a man as he is, I suppose, he begrudgingly gives any credit to the Georgia Bulldogs
yeah.
because they just it's a hatred between the football program. So for Urban Meyer to say that, I think it was very clear-headed, and it's what he believes. But he's been in coaching situations like that where you're looking around thinking, well, none of us were expecting this. They're all looking at me, so how do I – get that whole truck out of the ditch now.
Mm-hmm.
And Smart, to his credit, did that on Saturday night. He really did. They didn't quit. They gave up 20 in the first half. There wasn't any reason to think they weren't going to give up another 28 in the next half mm-hmm. because how they really hadn't stopped them all that much. And defensively, I think Georgia really acquitted themselves very well in the second half.
They did, and I'm hoping the Tennessee Vols are watching that second half defensive tape from Georgia and the first half to see what not to do.
What to do, what not to do.
Running quarterbacks have given the Vols fits.
In Georgia, we say the same thing. It's like, yeah, Kirby Smart's a great defensive coach. Running quarterbacks, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's a problem. So last week we had a really good conversation with Trey Wallace. He writes with OutKick, the coverage. We know him. He's a Mobile guy. Great dude. And one of our conversations were about, you know, all this different talk of conference realignment that continues as we move into the season, as we move into the midpoint of the season. And this week there were two different meetings, or maybe one's coming up. You have one group of it's one group that's trying to develop a college football super league. And Tuesday they announced their proposal. They're going to call this the College Student Football League, so the CSFL. The details, and this is coming from The Athletic, feature a football-only reorganization of the 136 FBS schools into two conferences. They say the top 72 programs, which would be most of the current Power 5 schools, would compete in what they're calling the Power 12 Conference. This would be made up of a dozen six-team geography-based divisions, and some of you are probably already shaking your head like, no way this works. The remaining 64 programs, mostly the current group of five, I imagine that would include our South Alabamas, Troy's, you know, teams like that that are in the group of five conferences, they would compete in what they call a group of eight. And then it would act a lot like something I brought up before, some of these European soccer leagues, like the Premier League, where they have different divisions. The teams that are at the bottom of the top division are at risk of being moved down for the next year. And with that comes less money, less high-profile games on TV.
Yeah.
At the same time, the guys that are at the top of the division below that can move into the big league. Then they have their chance to beat the Tottenhams, the Manchester Uniteds, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. really make a name for themselves and make a whole lot more money. So that's kind of the way they are planning on trying to do this. So if South ends up being the best group of five team, or what they call the Power 8 conference team.
We would knock out a lower, one of the lowest, or among the lowest, now in the group of four, group of yeah. five, whatever.
So, and you could look at a big school like Florida, mm-hmm. who's an underdog this week in Gainesville to UCF, and if they had just an all-out terrible season, they could be set with a schedule the next year that is just all Kent States.
Can you imagine that?
It's kind of... I like where they're going with it, but I don't think they're quite there.
No, and I'll tell you why they're not there, because you're affecting teams, you're affecting their money so much. You're affecting, if you were to relegate Florida or Mississippi State, and now you're still selling out even though you're having a poor season because you're playing good teams.
Yeah.
But if you relegate them to a spot where they no longer are even going to have, you know, marquee teams on the schedule, that's a big hit. I don't think they'd go for it.
Yeah, I mean, Florida versus Florida State, I don't care if Florida State's undefeated and ranked number one and Florida hadn't won a game all year. People are going to want to tune in to that game.
Right.
Because you never know what's going to happen, especially in a rivalry game.
And even in a down year, Dalton, think about this. Tennessee has had some down years recently, or middling years, you know, right around the middle. But you still want to see your team play somebody really good because you get to measure mm-hmm. your team. Are we getting better? Are we better than we thought? Can we pull an upset? Whereas if you took all of that away from 110,000 seats in Knoxville, would not be filled up to see a season full of UT against MAC teams.
Yeah, and really I think this isn't going to work on its face because of the SEC and Big Ten teams. They don't want to split the pie.
No.
They have the 20, let's see, if there's 16 in the SEC, how many are in the Big Ten now? They have the 30 best teams in the country. Maybe not pound for pound, show up and play the best teams, but as far as name recognition, alumni with big money, the SEC and Big Ten pretty much has the market covered at this point.
Well, here you go. Alabama, Texas, Ohio State, Tennessee, Georgia, Oregon. That's the top six.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State, another one.
Michigan,
Missouri, Southern Cal, Ole Miss, LSU. The only ones that are outside of the conferences that you mentioned are Miami at number eight and Clemson, Notre Dame at number 14, in the top 15.
And you still have, of course, Florida State, which is a big name program, but there's just not much outside of the SEC and Big Ten that are true money makers in this country. Yeah. So they're saying, why are we going to give a handout to you guys? And what it looks like they're trying to do is set up more of, like we see in basketball season, where they have the SEC Big Ten matchup, or they'll do an SEC ACC matchup. They're trying to set that up for football so that we get more games yearly between these massive schools. You might see more Oregon Tennessee games. You might see more Alabama Michigan games on the schedule going forward, because those two conferences are becoming tighter as the rest of the country kind of flounders and tries to figure out their place.
You're right. How about this too? Think about this when it comes to when this is a real possibility. Teams that are maybe floundering a little bit, it's talent acquisition. Now, you can recruit and you can get players like that. Or does Ryan Williams go to Alabama and say, you know what, boys, time to renegotiate?
Mm-hmm.
That can happen. Matter of fact, I'd be shocked if it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So you can have players like that that have outstanding seasons, like out of the box, like, yeah, you knew I was good, but you didn't know I was that good, did you? And what seed would that plant in the mind of an agent? He has an agent, I'm sure. Let's watch that going forward. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean just Ryan Williams. All players can do this. But are people going to stay at their school, or are they going to just upset the apple cart and say, time to pay up, boys?
Yeah, and I think we're going to see some crazy stories going forward. Remember how big a deal it was that Leonard Fournette sat out the bowl game not that long ago.
Like a century ago?
It does at this point, but we're going to see massive mistakes made, and we don't know it for sure, but this UNLV quarterback, Sluka, mm-hmm. who said, all right, we're 4-0, I'm playing lights out, you're not going to give me that NIL, I'm out. They come back and beat the crap out of the next team they play. Now they're saying, Sluka who? We don't need that dude.
Yeah.
And what's he going to do? Is he going to be able to negotiate with the next team, knowing that he stood up the previous team?
I think maybe those negotiations have already happened.
Mm.
Maybe he's already destined for somewhere, has it down to a team or two. You know what I mean? He might have made that move because he had a bird in the hand for next year.
Also, NFL teams that are looking at, you know, scouting some of these dudes, they say, wait, he, as a sophomore, he held out after the third game? And we're expected to negotiate contracts with him if we draft him?
That's Bear Alexander at USC.
Mm-hmm.
That's him.
That could cause some red marks on some scouting for the NFL. All right, we'll come back. That conversation we have with Paul Feinbaum every week, and plus our picks for this week's Pick'em all on the way right here on the D&D CFB Show.
It's time for Football Friday with Paul Feinbaum, presented by Bryant Bank. Your hometown bank with big bank benefits. Located in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Now, here's Dan Brennan and Dalton Erwig.
I'll ask you this question, Dalton. Does football actually exist without Paul Feinbaum?
I'm going to say it does, but it's not nearly as fun.
Paul Feinbaum, exchanging gifts with his callers on the air again that have wished him death. I guess you're doing okay, huh, Paul?
Yeah, listen, I hate to correct everybody at the beginning, but it's not exactly true. This caller, Jim from Tuscaloosa, did not wish me death. He just said, I want you to have a heart attack.
That's all?
And then slowly recover, I guess.
I think this is progress. Just about 3 years ago, he said, I hope you get stage 4 cancer. So, even though heart disease is in my family, I have worked hard to overcome it. So, even with a heart attack, I still think I can take his call.
it's quite a perilous job. Football is so, people are so passionate about football. You sit in the crosshairs every Monday through Friday.
It's good to know the country's coming together.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I'm not joking here. You know, everyone has a reason they love the Paul Feinbaum show, or I guess some hate the Paul Feinbaum show. A lot of our folks love the callers and the back and forth. A lot of the folks like me love the interviews with the coaches and players you have. But when you have a week like this after the devastation of Hurricane Helene last week, and so much of your listening audience was in the path of that storm or currently trying to help folks in that storm, it's always a reminder when an event like that happens and the Paul Feinbaum community kind of rallies. It's something really great to see, Paul.
Yeah, and everybody listening knows about dealing with hurricanes. I've dealt with it from a distance, but this one really hit close, not very far from our studios, and so many people are affected by it. And it's unlike the storms that have hit the Gulf, where you see it and you know exactly what happened. I mean, this one we're still finding out, but I appreciate you saying that. And that is the thing I do love about college football, though. It makes us forget almost everything, if possible. And that's really been the double screen of this week, with the tragedy on one hand, and then the ecstasy of what happened Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what a game, Paul. I don't even know, you know, I'm a Georgia fan, and so I look at it through one lens. I talked to an Alabama fan the other night on the phone, who he seemed to be as upset with the game as I was. Like, I was like, Georgia played like garbage. He was like, no, I think Alabama. So it's funny. It was an amazing game, but there's a lot of different opinions on it.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by it, especially old line Alabama fans who could only find the fault. I don't look at it that way. I happened to speak Wednesday on our show with Kalen DeBoer. He didn't look too upset. I mean, we live in a results-oriented world, and no matter how you get to a certain point, and I do think the good news for Alabama is that they're playing Vanderbilt this weekend, and it's a good team to recover from and play your C game and still probably win.
Yeah, I saw a lot of problems. I saw all the faults you could possibly see on the Georgia side, and I'm probably distorted in that way.
But you know what else, Dan? Like, watching Alabama play in that first half, I was reminded they really hadn't played, you know, anyone of significance. I mean, they've played some names this year, but it's almost like they held a lot of that stuff back, knowing that Georgia was right around the corner.
Well, Georgia, they had no clue in the first half how to stop Alabama. It was an amazing performance for one half, at the very least, Paul.
Yeah, DeBoer told me that it was really – I thought Alabama just came in, like, jacked up, but he said it was just simply a matter of execution. They were hitting everything. And I think there's a level of they literally ran out of tricks. I mean, everything they did was right, and at some point it catches up to you. And the funniest thing DeBoer said was that he said, I felt like after the Ryan Williams touchdown, we clearly left too much time on the clock.
Yeah, they almost did.
Yeah, but he said something interesting too, and I had not thought about it, because I mean, when Georgia scored that touchdown on the play before, and they went for two and didn't get it, it changed the game, because had they gotten it, I believe it was going to be a 3-point game.
Yeah.
So Alabama could have played for a field goal. Georgia maybe would have been in prevent. Instead, they missed it, so Alabama had to took a different approach. So anyway, you can go back into any game and find 1,000 different things. But to me, the fact that Kid Rock made it to the game made them obviously care.
He's the SEC's Taylor Swift.
I couldn't decide who looked worse, Kid Rock or John Daly.
Talking with Paul Feinbaum for Football Fridays, presented by Bryant Bank. And the other side of the state, Auburn, they were all geared up to get their first big SEC win of the year. And against Oklahoma, nonetheless, I think 21-10 lead they had.
They had it.
Peyton Thorne was taking care of the ball. And then all hell breaks loose, Paul, and Oklahoma storms back and wins the game.
Yeah, that was great. I want to congratulate Auburn for really putting up a good effort. I was down there the other day, and it was a sunny day, but it felt like storm clouds were moving in. Hugh Freeze has absolutely blown this quarterback situation. And, now admitting what he didn't admit in the summer, that he made a colossal mistake, really doesn't solve the problem. So what they're trying to do is, well, they got a big commitment this week. Somebody switched over from Notre Dame.
He did,
that really matters, by the way. And now it's going to be a spin game. And it really depends on what happens in some of these other games. They just have nothing to – I mean, they're not going to win this weekend. They're not going to beat Alabama. So you start doing the math, and who can they beat? And if they have what looks like a disastrous season, Hugh Freeze will likely survive, but he'll survive about as wounded as a coach can be.
You know, it's on college game day this week. They go to a coach on the field ahead of their game. They're just strolling along hours before the game, and they decided to have a conversation with Lane Kiffin. And so Kentucky, of course, is playing Ole Miss. Was that 11 o'clock kick?
I think it was an early game.
And Paul, he's strolling along in Oxford along, and he, like he doesn't have a care in the world. He just seems so confident, and like I say, like he didn't have a big game coming up that in 2 hours. I just thought it was poetic justice. Kentucky went in there and beat him. And I don't necessarily root against Lane Kiffin, but I was like, good for Kentucky.
Yeah, no, listen, he was sitting there, he was walking around the field going, after I win this game, how am I going to go after Paul Feinbaum on Twitter? he did that whole thing about what am I good at? What's he good at? That was a devastating loss because, they still have Georgia and some of the other major games, as everybody knows. And that loss will hurt you badly because Kentucky is not going to end up an elite team. They've lived off of that Georgia loss. So what? That game really exposed Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin, and they play at South Carolina Saturday, and it's a really dangerous game for them because they lost to Kentucky, and South Carolina beat Kentucky by 3 touchdowns. Yep. So if you want to do the crazy math of what happened before your team played this team,
it'll be interesting to see if the heat gets turned up on Kiffin. We're always talking about what job he'll move up to next, but will Ole Miss be tired of this after some time, having such high expectations and then seeing the team fall apart when least expected?
Yeah, let's see what happens the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, he's still in a good spot there. But, a lot of people in Florida want him. And I said a few weeks ago that it might be tough for them to hire him because he would be playing in the CFP. Well, it may not be hard anymore.
It might not. As far as the games we have coming up this season, you referenced it earlier, but Auburn, off of that terrible loss, their first road game here, they're playing Georgia, and Georgia coming off that late failed comeback attempt. Does Georgia just roll here, Paul?
You would think so. This would be a big game for Georgia to get back on track and to really let it rip. I don't give Auburn any chance in this game. I think the number's 23. I think it's going to be a rout. The only question is, at some point, Kirby Smart goes, what's the point? We have bigger fish to fry this season.
Also, that you mentioned that Auburn did get at least good recruiting news this week, flipping that quarterback Deuce from Notre Dame. It's not a story that's going to be like an immediate impact. Obviously, he's a player who's still in high school, but at least a program looking for some good news, they got some.
Yeah, and you expect stuff like that. It's amazing what money will do. and right now in Auburn, I think that they're pretty desperate to get a quarterback. I have no earthly idea whether this guy is the right one or not. We all know how difficult it is to Alabama's got a roster full of guys who were ranked higher than this guy, and they haven't played a game yet. So, these are just things that you don't know about. But I think ultimately, depending on how this season goes, the question isn't what Hugh Freeze gets in a recruiting situation. It's how many players does he hold on to? Number one, and there's one guy on his team that everybody will be coming after. I'd rather not identify him because then it would look like I'm interfering. But you guys know who he is.
Yes, we do
have an idea. Also, the Tennessee Vols had a bye week last week, so a little time off. But this looks like it could be a trap game for them, Paul. Arkansas in Fayetteville at night. I know the Hogs will be ready for that one.
I think it is a dangerous game. Tennessee has not shown any signs of stopping this year, but this is literally maybe the last stand for Sam Pittman. You don't have to stretch to make the case that they could be undefeated right now. They blew the Oklahoma State game. That was an overtime. They had every chance to beat A&M, and This win might save his job, and a loss here, that means 3 losses, and it looks like time is going to start running out on him.
Paul, part of our job is news as well as sports. And right now, Maduro in Venezuela, the guy that stole the election, is forcing his country to celebrate Christmas in October. And that's a little bit to me, that's like, boy, that's strange. And then I saw that University of Central Florida is favored going to Gainesville, Florida to play. So I'm thinking that's our own, that is our, that's the SEC's Christmas in October. Florida is an underdog at home against UCF.
Shouldn't you fire your coach just over that fact alone?
I mean, before the game.
Yeah, and this is a UCF team that just got waylaid by Deion Sanders last weekend.
True.
By no means, according to some of my friends, you know, a great team. but that is really amazing. And I think back to coaching longevity, if Napier loses this game, he might not get out off the field before they give him the pink slip.
Yeah, that's something I never thought I'd see. Florida, a dog to a group of five team in Gainesville.
Unreal.
It's absolutely unbelievable. And then the game you'll be at, Missouri at Texas A&M. A&M with the one loss. Missouri has had some tight ones, but they're undefeated. If A&M wants to work their way back into the college football playoff, I imagine this is a big, big game.
Yeah.
Yeah, believe it or not, this is the only ranked versus ranked game in the entire country. And I'm usually not one that says that, but when you're covering a game, you try to make it sound interesting to the audience.
Well, so our interest is now so peaked.
Listen, I got more stats if you want them.
Well, I think Mike Elko, it was probably a tall ask to have him come in week one and be ready, firing on all cylinders. But now that we're 4 or 5 weeks in, I think A&M could be pretty formidable.
Yeah, I really like what they're doing. I mean, they're already to the backup quarterback because Connor Wegman was hurt. But their calling card is defense. And I think this game's really about Missouri. I just don't really believe in this program. Everybody's tried to make them out to be something sensational. But they just don't look that good. And I think ultimately we are going to find out. I think I've missed my pick every week, wherever we've been. So I'll probably miss it again by going with the home team, A&M.
Yeah, but I see that. And when you say everyone's trying to make Missouri out to be something big, I think you meant Coach Drink himself.
Yeah, I mean, he's exactly. I mean, this guy is a poor man Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, he is. There's a lot of similarities there.
He's not funny. he really is not that glib. And please don't quote me on this because I'll have to see this guy someday and I have to act like I like him.
Paul, we appreciate your time. We took a lot of it this morning, but every week when we have this conversation, it means a lot to us and our listening audience. So thank you so much for coming on again for Football Fridays.
A pleasure, guys. Have a great weekend.
Paul Feinbaum, Football Fridays. Brought to you by Brian Bank, by the way. And Paul brings it, man. He does. He for our audience, he doesn't hold back.
No, he doesn't. And you could catch him every weekday afternoon, 2 to 6, right here on FM Talk 106.5. Football Fridays with Paul Feinbaum, presented by Brian Bank. More of our show, Mobile Mornings, after the break. Segment here, the Dan and Dalton College Football Show, or, you know, D&D CFB as it's known on the streets.
Heck yeah.
We're working up some merchandise. we've got our box seats all ready for all of the playoff games and national championship games, so we're being treated right.
Yeah, we'll be there, and we will report to you live.
That's the plan. So, big week of games ahead. Every week has some good games. You know, before the season started, we were saying every week will be marquee, can't miss. Doesn't seem like we've reached quite that point. I guess maybe some of you will argue that we have, but I think here in the next few weeks when we start seeing more, you know, of the Oregon versus Ohio State's Tennessee, I think next week is going to be a massive one, and then October 19th might be the biggest week of the year. I think that week you get Texas, Oklahoma, maybe Tennessee, Florida, which doesn't sound like as great a game anymore. But there's some weeks coming up that are just lights out.
Yeah.
This week I would not classify as a lights out week, but could still see a lot happen. One game, and we'll start with our picks right here, I guess. that my family pays close attention to, along with a ton of other families of service members around the country. You get Air Force at home against Navy, and they I don't think we've had an armed forces game yet this year.
No.
As they begin to fight it out for the President's Trophy at the end of the year. But Air Force is a 9.5-point underdog at home. Navy is undefeated and looking really good. Air Force is having a tough time this year.
Navy to cover, 9.5 favorites. Even though they're at Air Force, I go with Navy on that one.
I went Air Force, and it's because there have been so many times where I've bet on games like this that are exactly like this. Wow, Navy looks unbeatable. Maybe not unbeatable, but Navy's looking great. Air Force looks terrible, or sometimes it's vice versa. And then they get in there with their triple options and beat the hell out of each other, and you end up with a 6-3 win for one side or the other. So I'm taking Air Force at home with the 9.5 points. The game that Paul Feinbaum will be at, we just spoke to there, is the only top 25 matchup of the week between SEC teams. Number 9, Missouri, is the away team. This game in College Station in Texas A&M is favored by 1.5.
Yeah, I on my paper here, it says that I went with Mizzou. I'm going to go back in and change that. If I did that, that was a mistake. I'm going with Texas A&M.
I am too.
Okay.
Yeah, I like Elko. 1.5 points at home. I think that the Aggies are going to start looking better and better. One game that you've been talking about some, Georgia is at home. This is the first road game for Auburn this year. And they're 23.5-point dogs after that disgusting loss to Oklahoma last week. Georgia coming off a loss that I think I would say is less disgusting than the Auburn one. But how do they respond here, Dan?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I can't get a handle on who Georgia is, and I will definitely go with Auburn to cover here. That's a lot of points. That's not a bad team. They just make a bad quarterback play.
Moving forward, and I want everyone listening to hold me to this, I will not be picking Auburn.
Period.
Period.
Okay.
Until they start to show me something. So I'm Georgia here.
Okay.
They just burnt me last week, just like so many of the rest of you. South Carolina at home against Ole Miss, who is trying to not spin completely out of control after that upset loss to Kentucky. The Rebs favored by 9.5 points on the road.
Going with Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Rebs weren't what we thought they were. They were playing Dartmouth and St. Mary's, and so suddenly they had a real game, and they got outclassed by Kentucky. It was amazing to watch.
Yeah, I'm South Carolina in that one, too. Iowa is, Ohio State favored 19.5, Buckeyes at home, and Iowa's coming to town.
Easy, Ohio State.
Yeah,
I mean, well, Iowa doesn't generally score much at all. Ohio State's going to get more than 20 points, so.
Yeah, that's the thing, is Iowa can't put points on the board. They have a pretty good defense.
Yeah.
I went with Iowa. I need to start making some moves here. I feel like we could get an Ole Miss-style showing from Ohio State.
Okay.
We haven't really seen them play any big names.
That's fair.
Not that Iowa is. Alabama is the road team and the favorite, 23.5. I say road team. They're playing Vanderbilt. So there's going to be more Tide fans in Nashville than Vandy fans.
Yep.
But Bama's favored by 23.5 points.
Give me an excuse to go to Nashville anytime. Alabama, they'll cover.
I actually had a little tough time with this. They're coming off a big win. You have Pavia is the quarterback there for Vandy.
He's really good.
The New Mexico State coach that came over with him. They might have something for the Tide.
They could.
I don't think they'll win, but yeah, I chose the Tide to cover also. Our good old friend Butch Jones.
Oh, he's coaching legend.
He is in many ways, but none in the good way. And the Arkansas State Wolfpack is at home against our South Alabama Jags. Jags favored by 2.5 on the road.
Got to go with the Jags.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get the App State game out of my mind. If they play like that, they can beat anybody. Nearly anybody. Yeah. Not LSU, maybe.
Not LSU. That was a buzzsaw they ran into. Now they run into a buzz cut. So I think that Butch Jones is...
He's still got that hair.
I'll never get over the Butch Jones. All these different schools are doing cool things. And, if you're unaware, he was the Tennessee Vols coach, brick by brick, for about 4 years. Completely ruined a couple careers. Made a total ass out of himself several times. But everyone's doing these cool turnover celebrations on their sideline. Remember, Miami has the turnover chain.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tennessee trots out the turnover trash can. They're trying to look cool, and they have a trash can, and they just slam dunk the football into the can whenever they get a turnover. That trash can was symbolic for more than one reason there on the sideline. Speaking of Tennessee, they are off a bye, and on the road at Arkansas, and the Vols are favored by 13.5.
I went with Arkansas. I think Tennessee is really good, but Arkansas has got a lot to play for, and they're at home, and they've got no choice but to play well.
Yeah, and they have Petrino on the sideline there.
They do.
You heard Feinbaum say Pittman coaching for what could be his job. Yeah. I don't know if they'd lose it after a loss to Tennessee unless it was really bad. I went with the Vols, and I'm going to roll with them as they continue to look really, really good.
Yeah, but I don't blame you.
I have it in the back of my mind that they could certainly lay an egg this weekend. Keep in mind, Bama is the following week, so we've seen look-aheads go really, really wrong for teams before.
Right.
Michigan is 2.5-point underdogs. They are on the road in a massive Big Ten matchup at Washington.
So, I don't know much about Washington, but I did go with them in this game because Michigan has so much trouble offensively, and I would think that's going to be exacerbated on the road where they just have trouble getting out of the huddle.
Yeah, I went with Michigan because they had that win over USC a couple weeks ago, but you're right, that was in the Big House. Defense played really well there, but yeah, I'm going to stick with Michigan on the road.
Okay.
Washington has the whole, I guess they both have coaching turnover, but there's more that has been turned over at Washington than in Ann Arbor. And then the final game of the week for us here, speaking of a team we just mentioned, USC is away. They are 8.5-point favorites at Minnesota in another classic Big Ten matchup.
Yeah, Walz may be there for the coin toss and words of encouragement for the Gophers.
He'll say he was there for the coin toss.
I'm going with USC.
Yeah, I went with USC also. When's the last time Gophers had a good season? I can't remember. I guess Lovie Smith, was he the coach? No.
No, he was in Illinois. Yeah. They've got the guy there, the fiery guy that came from the MAC. It seems like so many Big Ten coaches cut their teeth in the MAC, won enough there to then get the attention of the big schools.
They have Row Your Boats guy there?
Yeah,
P.J. Fleck?
Yeah. That's it,
Fleck. Yeah, their last coach had a couple heart attacks, I think. Jerry Kill,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, he was a good coach.
He was. Yeah. And his heart, you know, just took him out of the profession. That's too bad. We've seen it happen before. But, yeah, I went USC. I'm worried we have a lot of similar picks this week. But
actually, be worried about that.
I shouldn't be worried.
No, I'm on a roll.
Yeah, the problem would be if I had all opposite picks. Yeah. Then it wouldn't be looking good for me. All right, that does it. The Dan and Dalton College Football Show. Hope you enjoy listening to this. It's on 8 o'clock every Friday night through football season right here on FM Talk 106.5. But if you listen to the podcast, it's available much earlier in the day. Have a good one, everyone.